So you just finished a procedure about 20, 30 minutes ago.
Yes.
And how are you feeling?
I feel fine. Within the 5 minutes after the procedure, I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, the cramps were a 5. I know everybody is different, but here I am 20 minutes later, and I am totally fine. I feel almost nothing. They're like, I don't even cramp during my period, but these are like first day minor cramps.
So I wanted particularly to interview you because for a couple of reasons. One is your age, and you're in your mid-40s.
I'm 46. I'll be 47 in November.
And it's actually not uncommon for me to see women in their 40s.
Which
it's quite common.
Boggles the mind, yes.
And you're somebody who even had some fertility treatments at some point.
I didn't have fertility treatments, but I was trying to have a baby naturally for 2 years, and we could not get pregnant, and we just kind of stopped being really intense about it. And then I did get pregnant about 9 months later, and I had a miscarriage at 12 weeks.
That's hard.
So, and that I was 43 at that time. And I think at the time, you know, after we stopped trying really hard and thinking about it, you know, it's one of those classic things. You stop trying or you stop thinking about it and you get pregnant, and because you're relaxed and you're not concentrating on it constantly. And at the time, I'd kind of put a, you know, a wall down where it was like, I don't want to be pregnant at 44. So if I'm not pregnant by, you know, by the time on February of my 43rd year, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, and there I was, you know, this September of my 43rd year, pregnant. We were really happy. And I was just about to go through all of the testing. You know, I was, it was 11 weeks. I think I was going to do 12 week test at 12 weeks. And, I started spotting one day, and I had a miscarriage at home in sort of in consultation with my midwife over the phone, and I did not do an aspiration after. You know, it was gruesome. I'm glad I did it at home. I'm not squeamish, so I was sort of, you know, kind of interested weirdly, you know, maybe a little morbidly, just to sort of go through the process.
Mm-hmm.
But it was intense, and I think, you know, I would not want to do it again at home. So it, and at that point, we were just like, you know, maybe this isn't the time. Just between the idea of doing treatments or giving myself shots, like, we, you know, it was just too much by that point. And I was, you know, ready to go. I'd stayed home for almost 5 years to take care of my son, and it was time to go back to work, and, you know, we just kind of made the decision. So having this happen now was just kind of like, no, you know, I can't. I can't, you know, it'd be nice 4 years ago, but I can't, I just can't back up and, you know, stop work, you know, risk work stuff again. And I mean, it wasn't a difficult decision to make this. I mean, these are never, that's ridiculous to say, these are never easy decisions, but knowing about, learning about this process and knowing I could do it very early definitely takes some of the emotionality out of it, and was, you know, was a godsend. It was the right thing to do, and I'm so grateful, you know, having been an abortion advocate in college and, you know, taken women to clinics and seen this sort of firsthand, the bad part of it, the worst part of it, having an experience like this is amazing and should be a much more widely promoted option for women.
So your son is now 9.
Yes.
And do you want to just say some of the differences you're feeling from 3 years ago to now as far as making the decision?
Yeah, I think, you know, with a 9-year-old too, you know, I think having a 10-year difference between kids was, you know, was one of the first things that came to my mind. I mean, even though I was fairly sure I just didn't want to have a kid at this point, having just gotten resettled into work habits and, you know, moved recently and done all these kind of big life decisions, the second thing that occurred to me was having a 10-year difference between children.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was older when she had me. I'm 46, about to turn 47. My mother is 88, and I'm taking care of her now, and she's in an Alzheimer's home. You know, like, and the idea, like, I already feel like I'm taking care of two children between her and my son, and doing, entering that into the picture it is not an option. I mean, I have a responsibility to her now. Yeah, I think that is probably the big difference. My mother wasn't as sick when I got pregnant at 43, and I think we would have been able to manage it in a different way. But now I don't feel like I could do all of that anymore. I mean, I already don't feel, you know, with a 9-year-old and work and, you know, what's happening in the world, like, you already don't feel like you can manage mm-hmm. everything in New York City. And, you know, 5 years ago it would have been nice to have a baby, but now it's just, it's not the time.
How were the physical aspects of this in weighing into your decision? I think, in my experience, things really start to change in your 40s. I told you I had a baby at 40, and the difference between having a baby at 40 and 26 for me was night and day.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I have an older friend who, many years ago, I mean, I don't even know if I was married yet, an older friend of a woman who's about 10 or 12 years older than I am, had gotten pregnant at 40, and she was a little nervous about it, but excited. And after she had her daughter, she was super pushy about me having a baby. She's like, do it now, do it now, do it now. I'm just like, I'm still figuring things out. I'm still traveling. I'm still doing all these things. I want to be careless and reckless. And she said something that, you know, you never take people's advice, right? You know, and she said something to me that at the time I just ignored, of course, but recognized now. And she said, you just won't have the stamina after a certain amount of, you know, after a certain age. And, you know, I have a 9-year-old boy, and, like, I get it now. Like, the stamina mm-hmm. thing is huge. And, I mean, I'm fairly fit, you know, and, you know, I don't exercise as much as I should. I probably drink too much wine. But, you know, like, I can deal, I can keep up, but I recognize there will be a day when I wouldn't be able to. And if I had, I mean, you know, there might be a small difference between having a boy or a girl, but, like, if I had another boy, and the idea of being 50 with a 3-year-old kid and what my son was like at 3, you know, is, like, oh my God, you know, I don't think I'd be able to do it. It's also a huge emotional commitment. As we get older and your parents get older and you're already taking care of a little kid, you know, like, the emotional commitment too, it's like, does one have that much capacity, you know, to take care of all?
So you said before when we were talking that you used to be an abortion advocate, and years?
So I was in college in rural Pennsylvania in the mid-80s when Pennsylvania, as it still is, a deeply Republican, deeply conservative state, abortion laws have loosened up a tiny bit. I think they're kind of moving backward again in Pennsylvania, but at the time they were very restrictive. I went to a huge college. We had a women's health center that by school standards or whatever laws, regulations, we were not allowed on campus in the Women's Health Center to give women a lot of information about terminating pregnancy. So a group of us, some older, I mean, I started doing this in my first year there, I was 17 years old, and some women who had been in school, you know, longer than I had formed a sort of advocacy circle. They met in an off-campus house where some of them lived. And, you know, just by word of mouth and through women who worked at the health center, you know, who couldn't kind of speak on record, but passed word along to women who were seeking terminations. They got a hold of our phone numbers, or they came by, and we basically had, I mean, and not to be flip about it, but we sometimes called it the abortion caravan, where a few of us had cars, and we would take women to New York to get terminations, because in Pennsylvania you needed parental consent before 18. It was 20 or 21 at some point, but I think at the time it was before 18. So we were taking 18-year-olds to New York to get abortions, and older women, you know, women who were past the restrictive age, could get abortions up to 16 weeks in Pennsylvania at the mm-hmm. time, the mid-80s. And we would take them. There was a clinic in Harrisburg, which was about an hour and a half away, but it was kind of grisly, and nobody wanted to go there, so we sometimes took women to Maryland, where it was a little bit looser. But yeah, it was a very formative experience for me. I did not have a termination in college, but I did in graduate school when I was in California, where the laws were pretty fast and loose, you know, compared to Pennsylvania. I had a 12-week abortion in California, a surgical abortion, which, you know, was in a clinic, but was actually not a terrible experience at all, in fact. And they were really good. It was a, you know, women-only staffed, and this was San Diego in 91. For these things, you know, from what I saw compared to what I experienced with women who I escorted to clinics, the experience in San Diego was, you know, a was stellar.
Say more about what did you actually go into the clinics with
them?
Well,
women were not allowed to have any kind of partners with them, female or male or friends or family. You had to go into the room alone, which was just horrifying to imagine an 18-year-old or 17-year-old doing it on her own. But we did escort them in. In Pennsylvania, especially the clinic in Harrisburg that we sometimes took women to, they were always protesters. So we kind of formed a chain and would escort women in. And that alone, I mean, just the trauma alone of entering the clinic in sort of such a state, you know, for them was, you know, it was horrifying to have to, you know, think about going through that and it not being no privacy whatsoever. And a large waiting room, you know, it felt like the DMV, you know, you know, it's a huge waiting room and sad women and angry women. You know, and you know, there's an air of desperation about it, and there's also that air of shame about it. I mean, I don't think anyone questions that, you know, there's been this insinuation that it's a shameful thing to do. You know, I think the hard thing, too, for women that age, you often, I mean, having talked to a lot of women, you know, on these long drives, you know, to clinics, you know, women, it turns out, you know, are frightened, you know, to take pregnancy tests when they miss a period because they can't even face the idea that they might be pregnant. So they put off taking a pregnancy test. And then in a state like Pennsylvania or Arkansas, where my sister works as a genetic counselor, you know, you can't get an abortion past 20 weeks. So, you know, then, you know, it's so traumatic on every level. But no, I mean, to answer your question directly, you could not go into the clinic with them. Into the room with them, the procedure room. And you couldn't even see them until they were, if they had gone under, you couldn't see them until they were awake. I mean, I'm glad to have done it, though. I mean, you know, women in states where restrictions are still in place, women need that kind of support. I mean, even if the conditions of clinic culture don't change, the one thing that should change is that women should have an advocate in the room. I mean, that is of the utmost, you know, importance. I would say if anything could change, that should be sort of the first thing. And I mean, I don't know if, you know, women who have had terminations are just kind of embarrassed to come out and speak out about it. I mean, you don't see that in advocacy culture or policy culture, really. I mean, lots of women come out and you know, who are pro-choice and want to change the system do come out and speak. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that cultural block is that women don't want to come out and help advocate for it. I mean, it's, you know, if, you know, we you know, the shame of being pregnant when you don't want to be pregnant needs to be stripped away. It's not a huge deal. And women need to be encouraged to take pregnancy tests earlier or be more aware of their own bodies and cycles so they know they're pregnant earlier. And they need options like this. There's just no other, you know, there's just nothing else to say. It's so black and white. It's so clear that this needs to be an option for people.
There's still this culture that I think women feel ashamed because
Absolutely.
They think that they're
Absolutely.
Supposed to be in some extreme situation
yeah.
to not
right.
have a baby.
Right. Right.
But in fact, for 20
yeah.
years, I've just seen normal women
yeah.
making normal
decisions. Yeah. Well, yeah, and making a decision for themselves, you know. I mean, I think that that's something that the wider culture sometimes has a problem seeing, you know, is like, you know, I'm back to work now. I have finally established, like, a system with my kid and my job and my home and my mom, you know, and, like, it's finally done. And, like, it's like, you know, not having a baby is, right now, at 47, you know, is the right thing to do, you know, for me and for
yes.
my health and my mental health, my son's health, you know. It's like, I have a sister who's 5 years older than me, and I thought, you know, and I, growing up, I think we both felt 5 years, it's a big gap, mm-hmm. and 10 years, I mean, I can't imagine having kids 10 years apart. It just, it kind of boggles the mind, so.
Yes, it's very complicated and very, medicine and especially women's health has, of course, this history of not being able to make changes and
progress,
especially in making things more natural for women.
Better, yeah, just.
So, and then on top of it, you add the stigma in politics and, like you're saying, the lack of advocacy
yeah.
and
yes.
just outspokenness
yeah.
that we don't,
No, I mean, when we were doing this in college, and my sister did it as well, because we overlapped in college for a year at the same school, and she was doing this advocacy as well, and, I mean, we were vilified. I mean, it was hard to do this work, you know, that we had interlopers, we had people pose, you know, we had women who, you know, from, like, you know, the Christian groups on campus who would kind of pose as women who need abortions, come, you know, then the house would be found out, so we would have to find another place to meet. You know, it was really intense, and I will never forget that work, and I'm glad, I'm very glad I did it. And anything I could do to sort of promote or normalize this procedure, I would be happy to do. I mean, it would kind of give me a little bit of life back to, you know, get back into that work, especially given the political stage right now, so.